House Committee on Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs will come to order. Welcome, everyone, on this Friday morning. Thanks for being with us. We have an interesting day planned for you. I want to announce that House Bill 2359 will not be heard today. The drafters of that bill are not quite ready to present it, so that will be next Wednesday
or Friday.
Wednesday or Friday. Sorry if that causes anybody inconvenience. I'm going to do the work session first on 2564, and then we'll have the public hearing on House Bill 2356. We have a sign-up sheet that we have up here now. If you haven't signed up, you'll need to notify us up here at the desk. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2564 and call forward Mark Long. And the staff will refresh our memory.
Thanks. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. We had House Bill 2564 in committee on February 24th. It allows a person holding two or more licenses or certificates or other authorizations for acting as a contractor, business owner, and trades regulated under the state building codes to replace that with a single license. We have dash one amendments today, which came out of our work group. They replaced the bill, same concept, different way of going about it. The original bill had a subsequent referral to raise the means with the dash one. There's no fiscal impact, and it goes directly to the floor if the committee decides to do that. Thank you.
Okay, welcome, Mark. My notes say that we needed to remove some lien language. Can you sort of walk us through the amendment?
Sure. Morning, Madam Chair. Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. I think the overview is exactly accurate. What we did was replace the bill with the language in the dash ones through our work group, remove the lien language, and we clarified that the bill only pertains to contractors in the electrical, plumbing, and boiler area. It allows us to, in section two, work with our boards to write rules. That was a concern with the industry, that we would keep things consistent with the other licensing standards that are set by our boards. In section two, sub two, basically allows the division to run two processes, allow for individual licenses issued, if that's what the contractor so desires, or allows us to consolidate our renewal dates and expiration dates so that we can offer a series of licenses for an individual who's doing boiler, plumbing, electrical work. Buy one license, renew one time, or one shot instead of three different times as currently the practice of building codes. So that's more or less what it does. We've circulated the dash one amendments and to the work group members and received positive comments.
Well, thank you for your work on this. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Are there questions from the committee on the amendment? Good job.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move the dash one amendment to HB 2564.
Representative Gallegos has moved the dash one amendment into House Bill 2564. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Gallegos.
And Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2564 to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation and the subsequent referral to the Committee on Ways and Means be rescinded.
Okay, Representative Gallegos has moved House Bill 2564 as amended to the floor and that the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. Is there discussion? Again, committee, this is because the fiscal has been removed. That's why you don't need the referral to Ways and Means. Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Gallegos?
Aye.
Representative Garrard?
Aye.
Representative Merkel?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Excused.
Chairperson.
Both aye. Motion carries. And Representative Schaffler, could you carry this bill?
Yeah, thank you.
And I'll close the work session on House Bill 2564. And I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2356. Call Representative Greg Smith forward, and the staff will introduce the bill for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2356 prohibits a city with a population more than 500,000 from acquiring property by purchase or condemnation if that property belongs to an electric company and the property is acquired for the purpose of providing electricity services, and it declares the emergency effective upon passage.
Welcome.
Good morning, Chair Close, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Greg Smith.
I represent District 57, which makes up Union, Wallowa, a greater landmass of Umatilla County, and all of Morrow County. I'm pleased to be here today in front of your committee to speak about House Bill 2356. I have to begin by telling you, as I was coming down the hall today, several members of the citizenry and of our esteemed body said, you know, Representative Smith, it's pretty brave of you to bring a bill like this forward. A couple of them said, it's pretty dumb of you to bring a bill like this forward. But you know what? The reason we're here in this building is to have dialogue on these types of issues. And I truly believe that if we don't discuss issues such as the one we're about to discuss, we probably shouldn't be in this building. And so, Chair Close, I truly appreciate your leadership in allowing this discussion to occur.
Thank you for bringing this interesting bill.
Thank you. This last summer, I was reading through the paper, and I started to hear about the possibility of the city of Portland trying to acquire Portland General Electric. And I started reading a little more through the article and started to hear the pros and the cons, and it started to hit me. This really isn't just a City of Portland issue. This is a statewide issue, an issue that's going to have ramifications in every one of our counties throughout the state. It's going to have ramifications for our cities, for our counties, for our special districts, for private business, and for those in the public sector. I want to share with you just really quick my background. I'm a part-time legislator. I do this as a service to the citizens of Eastern Oregon, and I'm grateful that they've sent me here. But my background is in economic development, in creating jobs. And I have to tell you, over my 15 years in economic development, I've worked with the public and the private sector, with our utilities, both private sector and public sector, our PUDs and our co-ops. And so I felt compelled to bring this forward. I really have no motivation. I truly just believe that this is an issue of enough magnitude that we need to have a discussion. I'd like to share with you some of the issues that I see need to be addressed because of their ramifications statewide. The first issue relates to preferential power. As you know, if the city of Portland is to acquire Portland General Electric and its assets, it's going to have a fiduciary obligation to go after preferential power. That's going to have a significant impact on our rural co-ops and our public utility districts. And I think that's an issue that needs to be addressed. The issue of ownership of assets is a significant concern. And these assets are located throughout Oregon. In my home county of Morrow County, Portland General Electric owns a cogen facility. And we want to know, in Morrow County, who's going to own that? Portland General Electric has hydroelectric facilities, cogen facilities, and transmission infrastructure. I think we, as a body, need to understand how are those assets going to be transferred and what's going to be the impact of that on the state of Oregon. There's going to be a tax impact. There's obviously going to be a reduction in state income tax, potential property tax loss to the counties. In Morrow County, that loss would be over $1 million. There's fees in lieu of tax. Those are issues that need to be addressed. There are environmental concerns. Portland General Electric, I'm sure, has water rights issues that they're dealing with, and I'm sure that they're dealing with environmental tax credits. Those are issues that I believe need to be addressed on a statewide issue. There's intergovernmental agreements that need to be addressed, not only federal and state, but also at the local level. I have yet to hear how the city of Portland chooses to address its intergovernmental agreements with counties and cities that have these privately held assets. And again, I think that's a discussion we should have. Special districts, enterprise zone designations, how are we going to deal with those issues? And finally, I guess the discussion we need to have as a body is perhaps a philosophical question answered. should a Fortune 500 company with assets here in the state of Oregon, a company that's been an exemplary neighbor to all of us, should that be transferred to public ownership? That's why I've introduced House Bill 2356, and that's why I bring it forward to you today. I think these are issues we need to address. I think difference of opinion is positive, and it often strengthens public policy. I don't think that this is an anti-urban, anti-Portland bill. I don't think this is a rural versus urban issue. I think this is a statewide issue that we need to look at and make sure that it works for everyone. I raise this issue because in June, hopefully June, when we sign EDI, we as a body lose our ability to statutorily impact this transaction for 18 months. And so we, as the leaders of this state, we need to know how is this going to impact us. That's why I brought this before to you today, Chair Close. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. Representative Smith, questions? Representative Merkley and then Gallegos.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Smith, for your testimony. As you spoke, it seemed to me that most of the issues you're raising apply regardless of who buys PGE. Of course, we've gone through many transactions, PGE being purchased by Enron and PP&L being purchased by Scottish Power. And now there have over time been many suitors for PG&E as a property, yet your bill only addresses really the city of Portland. Why are your concerns not equal about other groups that may be in contention to purchase PG&E?
Sure. Again, I refer back to my initial comments, Chair Close, Representative Merkley. This was a bill that was drafted last summer. This is a bill that I anticipate would want to be amended because, as you and I both know, multiple parties have stepped up. But it goes back to the basic philosophical question. Should a private asset be turned over to the public? That's why I've introduced this bill.
Representative Gallegos. Thank you for coming today, Representative Smith. Can you allude to it's over $1 million in taxes that might be in jeopardy that is received in your region? Do you know what the employment base is that depends on the Cogent facility, the hydroelectric, the transmission? Do you know what your employment base that in your districts that are dependent upon that infrastructure?
Sure. Thank you, Chair Close, Representative Gallegos. What I can do is give you a very broad, generic answer on that. What I will share with you is that upwards of 50 good family wage jobs potentially would be transferred from the private sector to the public sector. These are jobs that pay $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, jobs that help stimulate the Main Street economy throughout not only Morrow County but Umatilla County as well, jobs that help buy homes in our community, sell cars in our community, jobs that support rural Eastern Oregon.
Thank you. Representative Byrd.
Good morning, Representative. This is much more of just a comment in that this same question was recently put to the voters in the state of Nevada regarding a bankrupt Nevada Power company that was looking at being taken over by a water district. And the people in Clark County voted pretty overwhelmingly that they did not want government owning their power company.
Well, and Chair Close, Representative Garrard, I cannot disregard the impact this transaction if it were to move forward as presented, as I understand it being presented, the impact that would have on our local co-ops to acquire preferential power. It'd have a tremendous impact. And make no mistake, a public body, whether it's the city of Portland or any other public body, is going to have a fiduciary obligation to go after that preferential power. Make no mistake. Now, they can talk any way they want that, no, we'll reach an agreement. But the fact of the matter is, a public body has an obligation to represent the citizens it serves. And when you introduce such a large body into a small pool, someone's going to get displaced. And my concern is that our local rural co-ops and our small public utility districts are going to be displaced. So I appreciate your comment.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Clough.
Next we'll call Doug Riggs. Welcome, Doug. Looks like you have brought lots of information for us.
Chair Close, members of the committee, thank you very much. Good morning. I appreciate the opportunity to be here on short notice. We got the call yesterday about 4:30, and we members of the coalition talked on a conference call last night and decided to come and testify this morning, so we appreciate this opportunity. As you note, I have handed out some material that I want to go through, but I also want to go through what is our standard PowerPoint presentation that OJP has made to a number of chambers of commerce, business groups, public bodies, etc. For the record, Madam Chair, my name is Doug Riggs with PacWest Communications. PacWest is a member of Oregonians for Jobs and Power. We were one of the founding members along with a number of our clients, and in a second I'll go into exactly who our members are. I want to start out by saying why we're involved in this issue. And I guess first I should say we were not any more aware of this bill than anyone else in the lobby until a week or two ago. Chair Representative Smith called me in maybe a month ago at the most, shared a copy of the bill with us, and we've taken a look at it. I guess our general philosophy is that, and I'll get to this in our presentation, but we are in general opposed to public takeovers of private companies. And so we have not, our coalition, which is not a lobbying organization, has not taken a specific position on this bill, and I'm not sure that we will. We have chosen not to spend time in the building lobbying on this issue, and our approach has been educating business people and citizens in the Portland area and the Tri-County area. Let me get into a little bit about why we're involved, and these points I think are self-explanatory. We have a philosophical belief and a concern with what is perceived as a growing anti-business climate in Oregon, and there have been plenty of articles that have talked about this issue. I don't need to go into this, but certainly it's a concern. The second concern is factual. We began not as an organization opposing government control, but as an organization interested in government ownership last May. And the first thing we did before we took any position was commission an independent study by Eco Northwest, a respected, well-known firm here in the state that has done many, many economic analyses on a variety of issues over the last 25 years. They concluded, and I'll get to this later, that government takeover would not lower rates. And so I think that is a significant concern that we have. The debate is being driven by something that may or may not be true. Now, the fourth point is that we believe that this is a risky scheme for taxpayers, that any public entity that wants to take over PGE must bond. And with there are a variety of ways to do bonding, and I do not claim to be an expert on the bond market. But our general philosophy is that increasing the level of public bonding and indebtedness for this particular takeover at this point in time does not make a lot of sense. And the fourth point is a point that really is impossible to quantify unless you saw the story today in the Oregonian. And I think it says exactly what we were concerned about, which is that according to PC Commissioner Chairman Roy Hemingway, PG is having trouble finding private suitors for the company. And our theory all along has been that all the talk of condemnation, all the talk of government takeovers, all the talk about taking over a private company, if I was a potential purchaser of the company, I would be very concerned with that. And I would be much more careful and cautious than I would be if I knew that the asset that I was going to take over would be a private asset for the long term. So I think that what's happened here is the supporters of public takeovers have actually devalued the company and made it more difficult to sell, which I think is bad for our ratepayers. I want to talk a little bit about who we are and who we are not. There's a list here that you can take a look at in greater detail. But we have about 41 or 42 individuals, associations, businesses, etc., who have officially signed a sheet saying they want to be OJP members. We probably have another 36 people who have been helpful and who've been very interested and are on our email list and who've been asked to be kept up to date. What you'll notice is it's a wide variety of folks. I mean, you have Citizens for a Sound Economy, which is an organization you would expect to be in line with us. You've got the Oregon Republican Party, passed a platform, which you'd expect. You have associations that we represent, like the National Electrical Contractors. We have funneled quite a bit of information to our IBEW clients, who are very concerned about this and very interested in following this closely. They're not specific members, but they've been very interested. We have a number of state representatives, like the chair, who signed one of our petitions to be kept up to date. And then businesses ranging from the Oregon Teaching Center to PacWest Communications to Ames Research Laboratories, and the list goes on. So it's any allegation that this is simply one organization is incorrect. And what you will notice is that Portland General Electric is not a member. They were a member, and they specifically pulled out of membership last September after the City of Portland raised some issues with the Creditors Committee. And if you want more details on that, you can talk to PGE. But needless to say, they are not a member at this point.
Madam Chair, a question?
Representative Merklin.
Thank you. You noted that these folks have signed a petition to be kept up to date. That sounds rather different than membership in an advocacy organization. Are you presenting these individuals that you had on the list, these organizations, as ones who were interested in being kept up to date or as groups that have funded OJP?
The list of, Madam Chair, Representative Merkley, good question. The list of people that I just listed is a list of folks who have actually filled out our form asking to join OJP. And we've been very careful about this. We do not add people to the list who have not actually filled out the form. So we have tried to be very careful. As I said, we have another list of 36 or more people who the coalition keeps in touch with, sends information to. And if someone wants to be a member, it's easy for them to join. If someone wants to drop out, it's fairly easy for them to drop out. Some of these have been financial supporters, and others have not. It's dependent entirely on their preference.
Follow up, please.
Follow up.
Could you provide us with a list of the people who are actually funding OJP? Philosophically, I personally think it's very important to understand who's being represented by whom, and, sure, and that would be very helpful.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Please continue.
Again, as I mentioned, our general philosophy is that we believe that Oregon needs more private investment, not less. And I think as we see the high unemployment rate, the difficulties that you were all facing with the financial problem of the state, tax revenues dropping dramatically, our general philosophy, again, is that we need more private investment and not less. And according to economist John Mitchell, the only industry that has been expanding in the Portland area has been government over the last few years. Now, this is a third point is a point that's several months old, and I think with the budget cuts, you'll probably see that no industry, including government, is expanding at this point. But at the time when this was put together, that was certainly the case. There are a variety of different takeover approaches. We call them schemes. I'm sure the supporters of this would find this difficult to accept, and they're probably going to disagree with my characterization of these as a scheme, but we call them schemes. The first is condemnation, and there is a ballot measure that Multnomah County voters can expect to see on the ballot in September, pushed by the Oregon Public Power Coalition. They've gathered the signatures, they've turned them in. The Oregon Office of Energy will be preparing a report. Multnomah County will draw the boundaries for the election. And in September, we expect that there will be a measure on the ballot to decide whether or not the assets of PGE within the Multnomah County lines ought to be condemned and turned into a public power entity. And I think the representatives here from the Power Coalition can give you more details. But our concern about this particular approach is that the initial approach is only to create a public entity in one county. Now, I'm sure the intention is over the long term to add counties, add service areas, but at least in the initial beginning of this process, something that concerns us certainly concerns the employees. And I've heard Bill Miller of the IBEW say this specific concern of his. They do not want to see the company broken up. And so our concern with this is it would break up the company. There's also a legal question about whether or not government entities have a legal right to take over various generation facilities. And that's something that I think would be a very good question for you to ask the PUC if they came in and discussed this with you at some point in the future. I won't go into great detail about the BPA power issue because I think Representative Smith has illustrated our concerns perfectly. I think there, if I was a citizen in the Portland area and I had the opportunity at some point down the road to take advantage of low-cost preference power from the BPA, and my board of directors was not taking advantage of low-cost power, I would find whatever legal means that I could to force them to take advantage of what I believe is their fiduciary responsibility, as Representative Smith outlined, to try to get a part of that BPA low-cost power. And the impact on that, on the rural customers, would be severe and dramatic. The second scheme is a public purchase or a condemnation, and we don't know what is being discussed by the City of Portland because they have signed a gag order that prevents them from discussing it, and I understand and appreciate that. We've been frustrated that documents were prepared by the City of Portland prior to that gag order, such as redacted portions and a financial study that they did last summer, have not been released. We understand why Enron would want them to sign such a an agreement. And the bottom line is what the City of Portland is trying to do is create the largest public utility in the Northwest. And this gets back to the concern that I raised earlier, which is simply that you create an 800-pound gorilla that is going to be, at some point, demanding preference power from BPA.
Representative Gallegos, can you back up? Are those in here, in case you're going a little fast and we missed some of the words, or can you back up just as a copy of that presentation printed for us?
What I've got here in the presentation is not quite as detailed as what I left you, so I figured I'd give you the detail. All of the detail from this is someplace in your packet, but I can certainly get you a copy of this presentation. That's
okay.
not a problem.
You could do that. Thank you.
I'll let Commissioner Sten, who's here to testify, explain exactly what the city's intentions would be, but in essence, as we understand it, the city would buy the entire service area or make an attempt to it, set up a governing body, probably hire subcontractors, private sector subcontractors, actually operate the utility on a day-to-day basis, and set up some sort of a board that I would assume would include members of the public from the various communities represented, for instance, Washington County, Clackamas County, Marion County, Polk, Yamhill.
Excuse me, Doug. Representative Gerard has a question.
Doug, in that apparently PG&E will not be present here this morning. I wanted to ask you a quick question in regards to PG&E in a report from I think Senator Smith. It was indicated that PG&E and Enron collected $300 and some million for state taxes and never paid them.
Madam Chair, Representative Gerard, that's a valid point, and I think it's something that needs to be considered here. And I am not the expert to discuss it. You might want to call the PG people up to testify. I don't think they're here today.
No, and I apologize for asking you the question. But
right. I think it's a good question. PG paid its taxes, as I understand it, from the press articles. The problem was that Enron did not turn around, as I understand it, and forward that tax revenue to the appropriate body. So I don't have the details on that, but I can certainly see if we could get you that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Another issue that we're very concerned about is the whole issue of rates. A number of the news articles, especially articles recently, have suggested that all we need to do to lower power rates in the Northwest, and granted they are very high, much higher than they've traditionally been, is wave our magic wand, create a public entity, and voila, we will have lower power rates. And this is a question that our membership had seriously raised a year ago this spring. And that was a question of whether or not there would be some inherent advantage to lower rates from a public utility. And I just wanted to point out two of the quotes from two separate studies that were conducted in the last within the last year. The first was the Eco Northwest study that I referenced. They noted that, quote, the chances of lower rates transpiring are low, and I've included in your packet a complete copy of the report so you can take a look at it. And second, since some people might say that a study commissioned by Oregonians for Jobs and Power might be biased, I'll point you to the Regional Financial Advisors study which the City of Portland had conducted on their behalf. And the comment was made that unless you find a way to get BPA preference power, the cost of power may not be any lower under a public entity than it currently is under PGE. Secondly, nothing against public power. I think public power provides some excellent benefits. I think there's some tremendous advantages to communities that use it. But let's just take a look at facts. Public power rates have been going up largely as a result of the national market crisis that we've had. The deregulation scheme, and it really was a scheme in California, has been a complete and abject failure and was recently repealed by the California PUC. As a result of that scandal and national market issues, we've seen power rates go up for everyone, not just PG customers. And while PG rates have been high, they certainly have not been necessarily the highest in every customer class. The most recent material that I have points out that four of the five highest residential rates are from public utilities. PG falls number three into this category. In commercial rates, five of the highest rates in the Northwest are from publics, and PG falls number nine. And in industrial rates, PG is number six, and five of the five highest rates are public power rates. Again, nothing against public power. Again, public power provides some tremendous economic benefits and some tremendous benefits for communities, especially in rural areas, which traditionally were not able to get power to all of the areas that need to be served. But we should not deceive ourselves that simply turning PG&E into a public entity is going to save on the power rates. Eco Northwest pointed out in a supplemental report they did for us last month the obvious point here, which is if power rates were going to be lower from a public entity, we would see the results by looking at power rates throughout the Northwest, and we do not see that that's the case. A key factor in power rates is operating costs, and there has been some allegation that PG's operating costs are higher than they should be. And so we asked Eco Northwest in February to take a look at this. And they pointed out that in fiscal year 2000, the latest data for which information was available, every single public utility all the public utilities except for Snohomish PUD had a higher ratio of operating cost revenues than did PG&E. So the conclusion on both of these studies was threefold. Number one, the tax-exempt savings of a public utility is not enough inherently in and of itself to reduce rates. Without BPA preference power, and BPA rates are going up, I'll point out, lower rates are very unlikely. And there's a converse to this, which is if the city of Portland or if a public entity in the city of Portland were to be able to get a hold of preference power, your colleagues, your citizens from rural areas served by public power would likely see their rates increase. I'm not sure that's what this body is intending to do. And then
I ask you a question on that last slide? You said that a key factor in power rates is operating costs and that the publics have shown higher operating costs. Can you tell me why that is? Do you know?
I can, Madam Chair, what I'll do is I'll get you a copy of the Eco Northwest study, which goes into it in a little more detail. Okay. I don't have in front of me the appendix which outlined what the operating costs were, but I can certainly get that for you.
Thank you.
And then a general philosophical argument that I'm sure Commissioner Sand will disagree with when he comes up, which is that public entities tend to be less efficient and have higher operating costs than do private entities. Eco Northwest also concluded that there are other risks associated with a public takeover. They concluded that the term a public-private partnership is misleading, that the proposal at the time, Willamette Valley Power, which they were studying, was not actually a public-private partnership as they defined it. The risks with a new and unknown operating company would be high. We don't know who the public entity would contract with to run the utility. Would it be existing PG employees? Would they hire someone from the outside? Would it be someone who even knew much about power? We don't know that. They also make a very good point, which I think needs to be raised on the record, which is if you have tax savings that are leading to lower rates, that's a savings for the ratepayers, but that's a cost to the taxpayers as a whole. And you certainly know that any lower revenues from the state require you to look elsewhere for revenues to be able to pay for those programs. And then this is a philosophical debate that will take place throughout the session, but there are some who believe that the Oregon PUC has provided very good safety mechanisms for the region. I will point out that most of Enron's assets are bankrupt. Most of Enron's assets are no longer with us. PG almost alone among the Enron assets is still standing. And you have to ask the question, why is that? I would argue that the PUC set up some very stringent restrictions on Enron's purchase of PGE back in the mid-1990s, and it was those very actions that have led us to this particular point in time. PGE customers get their power, their employees are paid on time, service outbreaks are addressed quickly, and PGE is a viable and valuable asset for someone else to purchase.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question?
Senator Shoffler.
What's the status of PGE's employees' retirement funds?
Madam Chair, Representative Schaffler, very good question. The IBEW Local 125, which is represented by Bill Miller, has certainly been spending quite a bit of time on this. I believe that the ultimate outcome will be determined by the court that is handling Enron's bankruptcy. And I could not tell you exactly where that is in the process right now. Certainly, the employees, the IBEW employees who we've discussed this with, have a right to be very unhappy with what happened with their retirement accounts. And one of the proposals that we are going to suggest later in our presentation would be an employee purchase of the company, which we believe would allow, over time, employees to be able to recoup some of these losses.
May I follow up, please? And this in no way is a reflection on you guys or Representative Smith or anybody. But, you know, I want people to remember why we're here today talking about this. And no one supports and encourages private investment in Oregon and creation of jobs more than I do. But you know what? After seeing the way this whole situation's been handled and what's brought us here, I'm not sold on the city of Portland purchasing this either, but I'm definitely open-minded looking at governmental entities getting together and purchasing this, or maybe even employees purchasing it. But I'm not so sure that a governmental entity purchase of this business will do any better than a private enterprise. But I'm fairly confident that it can't do any worse. Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think that we all would agree 100% that the best thing for PG would be to get out from under Enron ownership. No doubt about that. We are not here to defend Enron. They have made many more mistakes than I could recount or anyone in this room could recount. So I would agree with that statement. I will point out that some people will make the argument, don't fear, never fear. We know you're concerned about loss of local tax revenues. Greg Smith, don't worry. We're going to take care of you. I would point out my own personal experience in working for a U.S. congressman from Eastern Washington. This congressman had a large area of land called the Hanford nuclear site, 568 square miles of property, which would have been prime agricultural property or prime industrial property over the years. The federal government signed a payment in lieu of taxes agreement 45 years ago. And the agreement was to reimburse the local communities for the losses of tax revenues that took place as a result of this government purchase. And I can't remember a single year during my time on the Hill that we ever got what we thought we were due, that it wasn't an annual funding battle, and that the Department of Energy wasn't continually trying to go back on their word with the PILT system. So, no ill will meant here towards the people who are supporting a government buyout, but it's very easy to promise that everything will stay the same. But over the years, the level of tax equity tends to diminish over time. That's certainly a concern. Our red flags have been the process that this has gone through, the governance issue, which is very sticky and difficult, and a breakup. And I won't go into this in any detail. I know we're limited here in time. I think a good question for the committee to ask is who's most affected. I would argue that even more affected than the people in the Portland area are going to be the public power entities. And if I was on the board of a rural electric co-op or a public utility district, this would scare me out of my tree. I would absolutely be very concerned about the possibility, as Representative Smith has raised, with the city coming in or the entity down the road coming in and saying, we'd like access to low-cost PPA preference power. And I think it would be a very difficult issue. The second thing that I would say is it's a consumer issue. There is going to be a fundamental disagreement here today, and I'm sure throughout the session, about whether or not the PUC or a City of Portland or county-wide effort would best be able to protect the needs of the consumers. Again, getting back to the Enron situation, I would argue that PG is solvent. They are operating. They're providing power. Their rates have fallen in the last several months. And that they have been able to maintain reliable service for their ratepayers. And I would give a lot of the credit back to the PUC. That would be a concern. And I'm certainly not claiming to represent Bill Miller here today, but I did think that the employees ought to be the people who were looked at significantly. And Bill Miller, the IBEW 125 business manager, made a comment. Speaking to the city council, he told the city council to save your money. And in essence, he was saying at the time, that he did not think that this was in the best interest of the employees. I have to point this out because we've pointed it out before, and I'd be remiss if I didn't say it here today. Public ownership comes with some concerns about management issues. We've certainly seen what has happened with the Civic Stadium. There have been concerns raised about the Portland Water Bureau. A number of the people in the business community have raised concerns about how the Vestas deal was handled. A number of companies have left the city of Portland. Columbia Sportswear is one. And, of course, we all remember last summer when the city threatened to charge $27,000 in fees for a company, for a pizza shop to move across the street. Now, I know that there is another side of the story, and you're going to hear that from Eric Sten when he comes up after me. But I do have to say that there is concern in the private sector and among our membership about whether or not government entities at this point are the best people to manage a utility. This is a point that I made earlier on, but don't just listen to me. We believe strongly that the whole debate on a government takeover has devalued PGE and made it less likely that it could be sold, because people have less confidence as a private investor that it will remain a private company. And I've got a quote here from Bob Jenks with Cub, which I'm sure that he will comment on afterwards, but it kind of makes my point. This is partly in response to what Representative Schaffler said. Well, we all know why we're here today. Enron has collapsed, probably committed a number of illegal and criminal activities that are being reviewed by the criminal justice system. And as a result, no one in the state of Oregon, or very few people in the state of Oregon, have a favorable view of Enron. But you could also say that 68% of people polled by Grove Cork Insight recently also had an unfavorable view of the Portland city government. So it goes both ways. And the Grove Cork poll also pointed out that almost 60% of people agree that there are more important priorities for the city to focus on. Schools, transportation, mental health care programs, etc. And a general philosophy of our members is, at a time when we're talking about closing down schools, we're not being able to pay for mental health care, we're releasing people from prisons, is this the priority that should be at the top of the list? I know that you're all interested not in me just saying what we shouldn't do, but also what we ought to do, and I think there are several options. Obviously, the first and the most ideal would have been a locally leveraged buyout by a local company. I don't see that occurring at this point. Still an option. The second, which I think is the most interesting and something that I really wish that would be pursued, you need to get business management and labor together on this, which would be an employee stock ownership program, an ESOP purchase, which would have a tremendous number of advantages, tax advantages, as I mentioned in response to a question earlier, advantages, I think, for the long term for members of the employee base, et cetera. There has been a potential discussed of PGE remaining with an OPCO, or a company that would come after Enron, and I know that concerns some people. And of course, the last is the process that we're seeing PGE go through right now, trying to find a private buyer. And I would note that all of these would continue to be regulated by the Oregon Public Utility Commission, which we would find a good option. I understand why the local governments are considering this. After the Enron debacle, we're certainly all very concerned with the future of PGE. Governments want a seat at the table. We all want the ratepayer interest protected. And we want community concerns factored in. We do not want decisions all taking place in Houston or Washington, D.C. or Paris. The good thing is that regardless of who takes over PGE, I have confidence that the PUC will take the same kind of precautions that they took when Enron purchased PGE in the first place. And it will continue to be a regulated utility that will not be able to charge an increase in rates unless it's justified and unless the Oregon PUC approves it. Almost done here. A number of people question our membership. They've also questioned why people would want to join. And these are the reasons I think most people join. They're concerned about the city owning and operating an electric company. Some people in the rural areas aren't particularly fond of the city of Portland. They want people to stand up at the city of Portland. They want ratepayers to continue to be protected by the PC. And I think this gets me back to one of my very beginning points, which is they believe that Oregon ought to be more business friendly and not less. So what's our bottom line? All of us want a stable future for PGE and its customers. All of us want low power rates. We've done quite a bit of economic research, which we provided the committee. We do not believe that the public option guarantees lower rates. or that it would save jobs. Instead, we're proposing that you encourage and not discourage private ownership in enterprise. And as a result, we oppose public ownership of PG at this time. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Schaffler has a question.
Thank you. May we be provided with a edition of this PowerPoint?
I'm Chair Representative Schaffler. Absolutely. I would have made more copies, but I was running late this morning and have enough time for Josh and I to throw everything into the packets, but not to make copies. But yes, I will provide.
Thank you.
It.
Have a good weekend.
And Representative Garrard.
Doug, Enron's an easy target, but I got 100 shares, I'll sell you, for about 48 cents a share. just joking.
Yeah.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you very much for your presentation. After you've laid out all the woes of public ownership, it's quite a long list. And I was wondering, are there any publicly owned utilities in Oregon where ratepayers are up in arm and wanting their public owned utility to sell out to a private corporation?
Madam Chair, Representative Merkley, not that I'm aware, and as I noted in my presentation, I think many of the public entities that we have in the state are well run, well managed, and provide a very important need service for their customers. I have no philosophical argument against public power in general. I think in this particular case, and our membership feels very strongly that in this particular case, it's not the answer.
Okay. Well, thank you for your presentation. I think it educated the committee greatly, and we will look forward to getting copies of that. Next, I'm going to call Gary Conkling, Regional Power Study Group, and Gary Conkling, Industrial Customers for Northwest Utilities. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Gary Conkling today, representing the Regional Power Study Group, which consists of Clackamas, Marion, Multnomah, and Washington counties, which have formed an intergovernmental agreement to explore a governance structure for a regionally owned and operated utility if PGE is acquired by a public entity in the pending Enron bankruptcy auction. County officials have taken this step because of the Enron bankruptcy and the threat that PGE could be sold to interests with little or no commitment to our region and its economy. Like the city of Portland, counties have explored the potential public purchase of PGE. The county objective in this exploration has been to preserve PGE's assets for the benefit of Oregon. For a number of reasons, Portland was in the best position to lead the region's effort in negotiating and bidding for the purchase of PGE in the Enron auction, and counties stepped aside from active efforts to submit a bid. The Enron auction is still underway, at least we assume so. It's a secret auction, so I guess in some respects we may not know if it ever really began, but in any case, we assume it's still underway, and House Bill 2356, if enacted, would leave our region at this point without a voice in the negotiations to purchase PGE. We don't think that's in the best interests of Oregon. We commend you, Chair Close, and Representative Greg Smith for this hearing and the legislation to stimulate an important conversation about the future of PGE. County officials are not necessarily advocating for public acquisition of PGE, but they are exerting their leadership to design an optimal publicly owned utility if a public purchase of PGE occurs. And that would include provisions relating to preference power, payments in lieu of taxes, protection of linemen, and other issues of importance that the previous speaker identified. In fact, many of those issues perhaps can be addressed more directly by legislators through a public purchase than by a purchase to an entity that outside your frame of reference. County officials, in collaboration with the City of Portland, are in the process of interviewing key stakeholders to ask for their views and preferences if a public utility is formed out of PGE. We envision taking what we learn from stakeholders and framing one or more models for a regional consumer-owned utility that is aligned with customer and community interests. We think now is the time to draw together to find a workable, widely acceptable model for fairly governing and successfully operating a publicly owned utility in PGE's territory. This model must provide for competitive, fair rates in Portland and in Polk County. And it must give customers and political leaders confidence the utility will be efficiently run. We thank you for starting this critical conversation today with this hearing. Counties stand ready to play an active partnership role to make sure PGE is a stable, locally controlled economic asset. And if I may just append to this, since the previous speaker alluded to at least one of the studies that talks about economic benefits from a public purchase, my client is the sponsor of that study done by economist Lon Peters. Dr. Peters has extensive experience working with energy and does a great deal of work, particularly with public power, not only regionally but nationally. And what the study showed, as clearly as I can say it, is that there are economic benefits. That is to say, there is a variable cost benefit for a public acquirer of this asset versus a private acquirer, assuming all other issues are the same. The reason for that is a public entity's access to lower cost of capital, avoided federal and state income taxes, though I want to come back to that in just a moment, and lower overhead. The study did not assume preference power from BPA. It made no change in the source of power. It did not suggest that there would be any benefit or even any access to such power. It did not make the claim that a variable price benefit would automatically translate into lower rates. It does suggest that a public purchaser may have more flexibility in addressing operational and rate issues in light of that variable cost. But that's all that the study asserted. I have provided your staff with a copy of that study, and if it becomes of enough interest to have Dr. Peters appear, we would be glad to provide the opportunity for him to show up. That concludes my testimony for the first reason why I'm up here, and I'm glad to answer questions on their behalf if you'd like.
Thank you, Gary. You're representing rather large counties here, four rather large counties. Representative Smith brought the concern of a small county in Eastern Oregon, Morrill County, and I represent medium-sized counties myself. You've said that the city of Portland is in the process of interviewing key stakeholders. Are you talking to those smaller counties? Are they giving input to this as well?
Chair Close, actually what my testimony indicated is that we're helping to lead the effort of interviewing stakeholders, and yes, we are interviewing people in as many stakeholders as we can find, including county officials and others who are related to these transmission and generating assets outside the service area of PGE.
So that would include Morrill County?
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Merkley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Could you address this issue of preferential power? Just give us a 3 or 4 sentence primer on how that works and why is that of such a concern to those who testified previously?
Chair Close, Representative Merkley, under the federal legislation that provides preference power from BPA to publicly owned utilities as well as benefits from the BPA system to residential and farm users and investor-owned utilities. It is a very significant issue. And there's no question that changing the sort of geopolitics of publicly owned, investor-owned utilities to this extent with such a large new public utility is of concern to the existing recipients of preference power. I think anyone, and certainly the city of Portland, as well as my clients, the counties, in evaluating this, have realized that preference power is not in a surplus situation. BPA has indicated, in fact, may be short of all the preference power it needs for current obligations. So making an assertion that you were going to get the power wouldn't necessarily mean you'd be getting it anyway, because it may not exist. There are contractual relationships that BPA has. So I think it's a very significant issue, and it's an issue that if there was to be legislation, is a topic that you may very well want to look at. I don't think any of the entities that have explored a possible public acquisition of PGE have shied away from the issue, and they made it pretty clear what their intent would be, but I can still understand why people would want more than just statements of intent.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. I guess we flip to the next page.
All right, thank you very much for your indulgence for letting me appear twice, but at once. I now, for the record, am Gary Conkling, speaking on behalf of the industrial customers of Northwest Utilities, ICNU, which represents large industrial customers that purchase electricity, usually in large amounts. They're pretty much call themselves the $1 million a month club, but buy that electricity both from publicly owned and investor-owned utilities. And ICNU is here today to oppose House Bill 2356. ICNU has not made a decision to support a public purchase of PGE in the Enron bankruptcy auction, but we believe it is critically important to preserve the option of a public purchase. That's especially true in light of PGE's high electricity rates and the impact of those rates on Oregon's economy through curtailed or transferred industrial operations. We think it is prudent to explore every option to lower rates and restore a key element to competitiveness of Oregon business. ICNU members are not fearful of PGE becoming a publicly owned utility. Industrial customers in Oregon and throughout the Pacific Northwest are served well by public power. The issue here isn't whether a utility is publicly owned or a regulated monopoly. The issue is whether the guiding principles of that utility are aligned with customer and community interests. ICNU has been an active participant with local government officials in exploring a potential public purchase of PGE. We have consistently voiced support for the following principles in the event PGE is purchased and converted to a publicly owned utility. First, its mission should be to provide safe, reliable, low-cost electricity to its customers. Second, the utility should be regionally owned and governed as a politically independent body. Three, it should adhere to the competitive, conservation, and environmental provisions of Senate Bill 1149. Revenues generated by the utility should be invested to benefit customers through improved service or lower rates. Fifth, the utility shouldn't be a vehicle to enact new energy taxes or fees. And finally, the utility should be operated as much as possible as a public-private partnership. The challenge we face is how to preserve an important asset for our region and state. We must accept the situation of the Enron auction as it is and work to create positive options. Taking options off the table, especially an option that may be our only chance to preserve local control, is not wise in our view. Thank you.
I have a question, Gary, on what you've said. You said the utility, if this happens, it shouldn't be a vehicle to enact new energy taxes or fees. I'm wondering how you prevent that once it's a public body.
Chair Close, I think that's always a fair question. Again, this is why I think considering legislation that creates not only the structure and operating procedures, but perhaps also some parameters for this utility makes some sense. I don't think we want to create an entity and then geld it so that it isn't able to do its job. But at the same time, I think we can make reasonable accommodations in such a transaction that provides what we're looking for, but also directs the utility to really focus its attention on what we wanted to accomplish.
Representative Gallegos,
with respect to Doug's testimony and the comments about the devaluing of PGE, it would appear that the counties who you represent and maybe even the I don't know about ICNU, looking at this as just a contingency plan, yet it sounds like they're taking a very proactive approach. I'd just love to hear your comments about whether these very proactive and assertive measures to look at the public purchase of PGE and how that might be affecting its whether or not it is devaluing it.
Chair Close, Representative Gallegos, I think that the value of PGE, and for that matter, all of the assets of Enron, have little to do with what we're doing. One looks at the hemisphere in which this auction and this bankruptcy have occurred. The forces, the economic forces, in many respects, have occurred because of Enron. A lot of what's happened in our electricity markets and perhaps even in our gas markets have been driven by activities that Enron helped generate. So I think to suggest that the fact that public agencies in Oregon are looking at the possibility of bidding for an asset will have some devaluing effect on those assets. Actually, I think it's the opposite. It's not impossible in my mind to believe that the city of Portland's interest in actually offering a bid, if it has in fact done so, might be the most encouraging news Enron has. If you look at other potential bidders, many of which I'm not sure even have the revenue or the debt capacity to pursue it, they may not have many suitors. There are reports that I've heard from our own Public Utility Commission, and not in the newspaper today, that Enron's creditors have actually had to go look for private sector bidders just because many of them aren't interested in operating a utility out here and may or may not have the revenue to buy it in the first place. If I might add, the chair of the Public Utility Commission has made it very clear in various exchanges recently that it is the policy of this state to not allow a regulated utility to capture more of the debt service in rates than the book value of the utility. Now, I would say, just as statements go, that probably has more of a chilling effect on price than any whispered possibility of somebody condemning an asset.
Follow-up, Madam Chair. Follow-up. You mentioned nobody in the private sector having the revenue. Do the counties by themselves have the revenue to purchase PGE? Do the counties in this city of Portland together have the revenue?
Chair Close, Representative Gallegos, that's an excellent question. No, and in fact, what really the principle of a public purchase would be based on is the very point that PGE is a successful utility. It can be profitable, and therefore it represents an asset against which you could use revenue bonds. Not tax bonds, but really allowing essentially the ratepayers to buy it for themselves. And let me be really clear, ratepayers pay one way or another for the debt of a purchase. It doesn't matter whether it's a private purchaser or a public purchaser, the money comes ultimately from rates. It may come slow, it may come indirectly. I think the point that Senator Smith has made in Congress relative to the failure of Enron to pay federal taxes, even though ratepayers in this state have through their rates paid an imputed amount for those taxes, is the evidence that one way or another we pay for debt service. So using revenue bonds, at least from the standpoint of the industrial customers, strikes us as no worse an option than any other option that we might face to pay for the purchase of this utility.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Schaffler.
Thank you. You know, it's impossible to quantify the devaluing of these assets based on governments considering or discussing purchasing this company. But we can quantify with I think, pretty good accuracy the loss of employee retirement benefits. We can quantify the rates going up and down and the price of energy due to this debacle, and we can quantify a lot of the lying and cheating and thieving that some people are being prosecuted right now and being sent to jail for with pretty fairly good accuracy. So I just had to make that comment, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Schaffler. Committee, I think we're going to move on because we do have a county commissioner and we want to show him the courtesy of having time to testify. So thank you very much, Gary. And at this point, I would like to call Commissioner Eric Stinn, City of Portland. Welcome, Commissioner Skin. Thank you for coming to be with us. I know this is an important issue to you, so we want you to feel comfortable to take all the time that you need.
Well, thanks, Madam Chair. I appreciate the courtesy, and it's a pleasure to be here. As you can imagine, the City of Portland opposes this bill, but you may be surprised to hear my opening testimony is that I basically agreed with Representative Smith on just about everything he said. Not quite everything, but just about everything. And his main point being that we need to have a dialogue. I was disappointed he was unable to stay for that dialogue, and I've been a little disappointed we haven't had some other forums to do it, but we're ready and eager and willing to work on it. And I think what you're going to find from our approach is that we're trying to jump into this mess, not because it's a philosophical mandate that's coming from the City of Portland, but because we are citizens of the state of Oregon. This is a huge debacle, as Representative Schaffler just said, that the state faces. And last summer, when we started as a city council into this discussion, we didn't see another end in sight. And we actually, and I want to clarify this very clearly, didn't get into this saying we are going to buy this. We authorized our council and our staff to get into this and study the situation, authorized ourselves to sign the confidentiality agreement, which you've heard about, so we could actually learn the real situation, talk directly with Enron, and see what the best result would be. Little history that I think is really, really important. Representative Smith did a great job, which I agree completely with, talking about the virtues of PGE. If you go back into our city's historical record, you will find decades of partnership between the City of Portland and PGE, just like many of your jurisdictions. They were a good corporate citizen. They did good things. They provided good service, reliable service. And I think that our cheap power rates historically have been the backbone of our economy. And if you look at the current recession that we're in, it's an unescapable conclusion, and it's an unfortunate one, that the 65% or so in grade and increases that Enron has wrought on the state are a much bigger part of this recession than people are talking about. The Blue Heron Paper Company, who's CEO is a member of ICNU and that we've been working with to talk through possible strategies, just laid off 80 people and attributed it directly to power rates. I do not blame PGE for that. I blame Enron. And I think if we as a state don't proactively work this out, the idea of blocking solutions, which this bill could do if it went through in its current form, is basically saying let's give Enron more leverage, as if they don't have enough on this state and as if they haven't done enough at this point. What we did last fall was say to ourselves, PGE is great. If we could go back in time, wave our wand, keep it. Terrific. If you have that wand, please do it. Get us PGE back. Terrific. If you don't have that wand, and I don't have that wand, then we have to look at what's going to happen. Enron is selling PGE. They've tried to sell them four times in the last 6 years. About a year ago at this time, Northwest Natural, a Portland-based company who serves the whole state that we feel very strongly about, had an option to buy the company. It was after they walked away that we decided to step in and take a look at this. And I want to emphasize take a look at this before deciding. Northwest Natural told us they were walking away from the deal. At this point, I understand the desire which our friends from Oregonians for Power and Jobs shared to have another solution, but I think you need to underscore that to anyone's knowledge in this room, this has been going on now for a very long time. There is no Oregon-based company working actively to buy this company. Therefore, the only possible private buyer is one we don't know about, and it is all likelihood a multinational or something like that. Not that that's inherently wrong, but I think you as state legislators and us as city commissioners would be making a grave mistake to assume that's going to be good for Oregon, which is essentially what happened if we pull out of it.
Can I ask you, Eric, it's been brought up that the employees could have stock options to buy the company. Has the city looked at that at all?
Madam Chair, we are not capable of putting that together. To my knowledge, and I have discussed this, you know, I really hate, and no offense to this, some of the previous testimony, I hate when people speak for others because it's always difficult, and so I kind of have to do that. I've also spoken with Bill Miller. I'm speaking with him regularly. He's the president of IBEW. Probably the most likely group that could put something like that together. If you look at the national IBEW, they probably could pull that off. They are not interested, is what he's told me. The idea of trying to step into Enron's shoes, they think, does not do them any good. If a credible option had come across, we would be interested. Frankly, the idea that that could happen at this date is, to my mind, impossible. If it did happen, we'd be interested in looking at it, just like I assume you would be, because that would be a very interesting option. We believe that public power has worked very, very well in other places. We also believe private power works. We have no interest in taking on Pacific that serves our city as well as others, and did not move on this issue until it became clear that we didn't see another option. So we also are, just like everybody else, aware that at some point Enron's going to offer a proposed solution. I would suggest to you that if that's a good solution by your standards, that would be the time to come out for it. But coming out for it when it may not exist could be opening the door to disaster. And I would also like to point out very clearly, and then I want to just kind of get a little bit into our principles here, that condemnation is simply a power that our municipality has, just as the state does in many other governments. We are not the ones continually trying to fan that flame. It's others. It's not something we've debated at this point. We are strictly taking part in a due diligence process to see what could happen. And once we know what's possible, once we know, as you will, when they announce it, not us, what Enron intends to do, we'll be able to talk publicly about here's what we think the best option is. So we're not in a mode of trying to threaten or do anything else. We're trying to problem solve, and the difference you're going to hear from my testimony, and I really would like your help, welcome it, would love to have more hearings, would love to have community discussions. We've been all over the service territory talking with counties, cities, ICNU, AOI. You don't think of AOI and the city of Portland in the same breath. We've been working very closely with their folks to try and say, how could this look? What's the right solution? And we're very open on that. I want to just tell you quickly what our concerns are. We're very concerned about the cost of energy. I talked about that briefly, but the rates are horrible right now, and they're killing our economy. We do believe the right purchase, perhaps a public purchase, could bring the rates down more than anything else. It's in relation to what else could be done. If we can't prove that point once an actual transaction becomes debatable because there's one on the table, then we shouldn't move forward. But you have to look at it two ways. You have to look at it both against what's the possibility of getting the rates down, and that depends on both the purchase price and factors that are outside of all of our control, like the bigger markets. Now, I think the bigger markets will be more stable once Enron goes away, because I think they had something to do with those markets. And how does a public purchase compare to a private purchase if everything else is equal? And those are the two things that were getting mixed up between Mr. Conkling's testimony and the other group's testimony, because it's taking bits and pieces of each of those arguments, and I think this committee is clearly able to take a good hard look at those. And I actually think when you dig into the economics, they're not really that disputed. It's just when you change the variables, you can conclude that public is better or private is better. We're not going to put hypothetical cases on the table. We're asking you not to take a hypothetical off the table. We're going to bring something forward that's concrete. We also care very much about stability, and I think that the constant turmoil of this utility for the last 6 years has been very bad. That's probably straight self-evident, so I won't go into that more. We care about customer service, and we care very much about the employees. Our goal here, I mean, these are citizens from our region, from our state, who, have got their retirement taken away from them. Hopefully that will come back, some of it. It won't be all of it through the bankruptcy settlement. We would like to see those jobs protected. We are working through different ideas and would love your help and input and guidance on, if we were to end up with a public power entity, how would we run it? And our instinct, and I'm going to share with you a set of principles that's been widely circulated since it's dated October 29th, haven't changed a word since then. And what it says in there is all the things that we would like to find a private company to run it. We don't think the city of Portland should run it. We have made mistakes, as they pointed out, just as any corporation has, although I think most of our mistakes were honest, unlike the company that we're dealing with, and I think we were straightforward and fixed them when we could. We care a lot about customer service, and we care about local control. And I think, some people will say, no, it doesn't matter. It does not matter. Keep in mind, to my knowledge, and I'd love to hear otherwise, there is no Oregon company even contemplating buying this. I personally believe that it makes more sense to own these assets locally through whatever form, to run them using local citizens, to contract with private business to do the key parts, than it does to yet not let another multinational company come in. Make no mistake about it. Somebody who buys this other than a local bid, whatever form that bid takes, and you've heard people talk about different ones, there's a PUD in place. The PUD is not our work. We are neutral on the PUD. We understand why people are doing it, but if it's not a local buyer, they're going to be coming in to speculate to try and turn this asset around and sell it again. I mean, you have a liquidation sale going on of PGE. Representative Smith was focused on the virtues of PGE, and I agree with that. That is not what you have right now. You have Enron liquidating this company. I believe that one of the possible scenarios, and actually Oregonians with Jobs and Power agreed with this, their final point is that PGE gets broke up in parts. Their argument to you, I hope you caught this, I know you're smart enough and you did, was a letter from Stephen Cooper, the CEO of Enron, saying he wouldn't do that. That's what they asked you to rely on. What this state should be doing is saying, great, we'll take you at your word, but we're not going to say we're going to stack the game so that if your word, gosh forbid, doesn't turn out to be true this time around, we have no recourse. That's what this bill is asking you to do, is to take our possible recourses off the table. We're not threatening those. Nobody wants to condemn anything. It would be a long, torturous, ugly fight. But the idea of saying to Enron, okay, you wrote a letter last August, good enough. That's what they're asking you to do. That's what this bill is asking you to do.
Let me interrupt you for just a minute. You talk about a large multinational coming in and how that might not be in the best interest of Oregon. And I couldn't help but think about when Scottish Power took over PacifiCorp. How has that worked? Have you looked at that relationship, and has that been good for Oregon in you?
It's been acceptable. I think most of our leaders, and you hate to, you know, poke a little bit at a company that you're friends with, and we're friends with Scottish Power. I think our general consensus would be it was a little more responsive and a little more focused on Oregon issues when it was Oregon-owned. I, as a general philosophy, believe that Oregon-owned companies, if all things are equal, are better because profit stays in our community as opposed to flying out of country. I hope, and I may have in some of my vigor here, I'm just obviously excited to be able to talk to you guys about this for a change instead of talking through the sound bites that go on around this, and I just was really eager to share my thoughts with you. I may have sounded as if a multinational company could not, under any circumstances, be good. I didn't mean to say that. It's very possible that a major international buyer could come along that we would all say, hey, this is terrific. This is the anti-Enron. Go get them. If that were the case and the consensus were there, then there would be no reason for Portland to move forward. I just think it's more, what scares me is the idea that that's the only option in case, gosh forbid, that multinational looks a little more like Enron than something good.
Representative Barron.
Eric, City of Klamath Falls went into partnership with Pacific Power, maybe 5 years ago. And while I understand there's a difference between a power plant creating power and the actual legs of distributing it, and et cetera, this is merely meant as an example of a public entity, public government. The people of Klamath Falls were promised, if they built this plant, A, they would get lower rates, and that the profits from this would eliminate city property taxes for the residents. So everybody was really in favor of this. This was the construction of the cogeneration plant.
Right.
To date, 5 years after completion, the plant has simply cost another $2 million in renovations, has produced no profits, and has found Scottish Power was also not paying state and federal taxes. Your entity, City of Portland, would not be required, as I understand it, to pay taxes. Scottish Power thought they didn't have to because they were in partnerships with Klamath Falls, but now have found out, whoops, we do have to pay taxes.
Yeah.
But anyway, it hasn't worked out. And I guess I'm just asking because to me, it really kind of grays, again, the concept of a local government entity trying to be in the power business.
I think that's very well said. And you know, I guess our ultimate view on this at this point, and it's why I'm appealing, you know, to you're public servants, and I think this is something that Oregonians have to work together on. The City of Portland is going to need help to pull this off. The reason we got in this, and I think when you look at it, you may agree, is that we are the only government that's sort of uniquely positioned to be able to, in one voice, in an efficient manner, and keep in mind this is Enron we're dealing with. I guess hypothetically, because I can't admit whether we're negotiating or not because of the confidentiality agreement, to hypothetically negotiate with Enron. We can do that out of our city government. To pull this off, and you can see why Mr. Conklin was talking about us working with ICNU, working with counties, would like to work with this committee and wherever the appropriate place is in Salem, we'll need to work these things through. We believe there is risk in a public purchase, as you outline. We believe there's greater risk in not being involved. We didn't see any risk in getting into the discussion, which is where we are now. We have not made a firm commitment to execute a purchase. We will not do that without laying out a full plan, financial scenarios, debating it publicly, I'm quite sure, in this building as well as where we are, and having several, as it would, there'll be several steps, you know, duly notified votes. So we thought we had to get in this for lack of seeing anything else, and maybe with a good upside. Maybe some of the better sides of public power could happen on this, for sure. And the risk of not getting into us seemed greater. We won't know until this plays out whether ultimately it's a risk that we absolutely ought to take. Interesting, though, I would say that I would submit to you, I deeply hear and agree with Representative Smith's point about local taxes. Sound bites aside, I think you should believe that the city of Portland is more concerned about keeping local governments whole than Enron or Scottish Power is. History tells you that. So if you're considering supporting this bill because you think you're not going to be able to negotiate with the city of Portland, I think that's not reality. We are a local government. It's at the top, you know, this state's finances. And we're generally, you know, accused too much of wanting too many taxes. We're not looking to find ways to, you know, pull money out of the state. And that's what's happened with these bigger companies. So we don't have all of the specific, we don't even know what state taxes Enron paid. I don't know if you know, you may know, and if you do, we'd like to know. But those are all issues that we believe you and everyone else will have a responsive, transparent public partner in trying to address as we sort this out, if it is us.
Quick follow-up.
Representative Byrd.
I would assume then that the city of Portland would, if they went ahead with this, would have to issue bonds and would finance the purchase in that manner?
Yeah, we would contemplate revenue bonds that would have no recourse to our tax base, so there would be strictly, I mean, you all know the concept of revenue bonds, tied to the electric rates. We had in December an RFP process to select a banker to prepare bonds in case we went forward. And I want to be clear, that didn't imply that we have any agreement at this point. And we selected Goldman Sachs. They've been in the process of underwriting the arrangement. And I think the general logic on it is, if the price that we would hypothetically pay for the company is in the realm of what anyone else would pay, then the bond market will be willing to issue revenue bonds just based on the electric rates. Despite the, you know, and look, we will take our medicine like you guys have to when things go wrong. I mean, despite our flaws, we...
Well, yours is better than ours.
Barely. We are the top financially rated city of major size in the country. There are only two or three other large municipal areas. We're in the top 25 in size, and we're AAA rated. I mean, we will get the absolute best bond rate available to any buyer. And anybody who's going to tell you that a lower interest rate on the purchase price doesn't affect the overall electric rates is probably not a member of a functioning business.
Representative Gallegos.
We've heard a lot about hypothetically and maybe contingency plans, but it would sound to me like Portland is actually negotiating to purchase PGE.
I actually can't comment on that question because of the confidentiality agreement. I'm not a huge fan of how they set up the confidentiality agreement, but we found ourselves in a situation where they are the seller. This is a private company selling it, and they basically have said, you know, to have access to the information you would need to make any kind of reasonable, it's their private information that you would need to understand their financials, that's Enron, you have to sign this confidentiality agreement. So I'm bound by it. If something were to come forward, I want to be very, very clear, it wouldn't be a done deal. It would be a proposal that would then need to go through a hearing process, and it'd be very appropriate, for example, for this committee to hold a hearing and those kinds of things. So I can't comment whether we are or aren't in negotiations. There was a large article they're going to tell you where Chairman Hemingway speculated whether we are or not, and I'll just leave it at that.
And I guess we'll have to guess.
Yeah. I have another question.
Follow up. Portland's water billing.
that hasn't gone very well. It was very costly. Is it fixed?
It's working. I think you're probably well aware that I was the public official in charge of the Water Bureau.
I wasn't, actually.
The billing system went, I both had TV commercials run against me on that and did my own advertising saying, yeah, I was in charge. And what we tried to say through that is a mistake happened. We put the wrong billing system in. We recovered $7 million in damages, which is pretty high from a computer company from the company that sold it to us. So I think there was an admission from them that that didn't work, and it was clearly our fault for not catching it. We've got it up and running. All the bills are going out on a timely basis now. We do believe we're only going to get 4 or 5 years out of it rather than the longer duration that we had hoped for. And so I'm being a little long-winded because it's working, but not as well as we would like. But, you know, the thing that I think that's important to recognize there is when things went wrong, we were honest about it. We accounted for the money. We cut 50 jobs to impact that so the rates wouldn't go up as much. And we told people what went wrong. Those who got a late bill got a 20% discount. And, you know, almost every private utility in the city that I know of has had major billing system problems. Ours was just much more transparent, and that's not to make an excuse. It really was a terrible approach. Let me tell you, as a person who was in charge, that it's not coincidental that the papers you have in front of you describing the proposed approach that I'm recommending is that we contract out those operations. You know, in part because I think, you know, that's not another thing that we want to take on. Although I'd say I think those problems probably have luckily already been addressed in PGE because they scrapped 3 billing systems and now have one that works. So I would hope that it continues to work.
Okay, Representative Merkley.
You wanted to follow up?
Briefly. So if you were able to recoup $7 million, was the cost of it greater than that? And then did the taxpayers ultimately have to pick up those mistakes?
Yeah, it's the ratepayers in terms of the water. I mean, everything is a self-creating fund. We believe that the total loss to the city of Portland was in the range of $20 million. Around 7 of that, which is the amount we recovered, was the hard money that we sent out, that we paid the consultants, that we paid the company. The remaining 15 or so, and these are very round numbers, they won't be exactly right, was money that we lost and our ratepayers kept, meaning that it was bills that were never paid because they went out so late. So we recouped the bulk of our cash outlays. We had somewhere in the range of $15 million that never was paid to us, that our ratepayers kept. We cut about $5 million out of our annual budget in direct response to this to try and cushion the blow. And at one point, we had about a 1% rate increase that we attributed directly to it. So we did a combination. We clearly lost money. We recovered as much as we could. We cut costs and then that's where we move forward from. So it's. I would say it'd be absolutely wrong to say there was no cost to our ratepayers. What we tried to do is minimal. You can't make mistakes without cost, but I think we were able to use it as a way to try and get our organization smaller, which I would argue you should do during all times, but hard times make it a little bit easier. So that's kind of a mix of. I would say there was winners and losers out there in the ratepayers' world.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I just want to note before I ask you my question, since the water has come up, that was a situation where the city contracted with a private provider, and the private provider's software did not perform to the standards that were laid out. So in some ways, it raises the complexity. It isn't always that public entities perform poorly and private entities perform perfectly. Certainly we saw that with Enron, and we saw it with the company that wrote the software to drive the billing system that ultimately let down the city and created a tremendous problem. I'd like to turn to the breakup of the possible breakup of PG&E. In the newspaper today, Hemingway is responding to discussions of the possibility that there might be a company, a spinoff called OPCO. And he says, I would think that there would be no more Enron, that it will be liquidated. Yet Hemingway said the liquidation or sell-off of assets appears to be run into a chilly environment. This liquidation of assets, are we talking about selling different, the possibility that if there is not a buyer that buys PGE as an entirety, might decide to start selling off individual generating assets, so on and so forth, and how would that option impact the power situation here in Oregon?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Merkley, it's a speculative question, and let me be clear that I'm relying only on information I've read in the paper, nothing that's from the confidentiality agreement. Enron has, I think, 11 assets total that are for sale left in their portfolio. One of those is PGE. And so when you hear of the sell-off, it's really describing two different things potentially. One is, how are they going to sell each of those 11 assets? And we don't know the answer to that. The other is, would it be more with that one asset, which is really the big one, PGE, more lucrative to, for example, hypothetically sell the poles and wires to a telecom company, sell the dams to an energy generating company? Credible third parties have speculated you might make more for PGE selling it in pieces. The earlier presentation said that Stephen Cooper was saying he would not do that. It's something that I fear very much, because I think if there's anything that would be a complete disaster for the state, it would be to not have an intact utility. And I think that that's, whether or not it's probable, I just don't know. Whether it's possible, absolutely. One of the reasons that was cited, other than Trust and Cooper, I mean, there's two reasons cited that that's not going to happen. One was Cooper said it's not going to happen. Okay. Two was he said that the PUC would block that if it were to happen. If you go to California in the last 18 months, PG&E, another utility down there, is in an exact similar situation. Their creditors sold the company in parts. The California PUC blocked the sale, and the federal bankruptcy or the federal circuit court ruled that bankruptcy law is Trump's PUC authority. And so at least in California, PG&E was ruled that it could be sold off in part. So I'm not willing to rely beyond a shadow of a doubt that Enron won't and can't sell it off in parts. Now, I don't know that they would do that. I'm not implying that. I'm simply saying that as elected officials, what we don't want to do is take any options to respond to those kind of scenarios off the table. We don't need to worry about them at this point. We should worry about them, but we should be things like saying, under no circumstances imaginable should the City of Portland be allowed to use its condemnation powers that have been with us since our charter. Just doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't mean that's what I think is likely to happen. But those are the reasons. If something were to happen, taking tools off the books that are there for a reason, which is, I want the dialogue, but that ultimately is what Representative Smith's bill does if you pass it.
Okay. Well, thank you, Commissioner, so much for being with us. We've learned a great deal.
Thanks for your time.
And we will follow your efforts closely.
And please call if I can get more information.
We will. Thank you. Okay, I'd like to go to Sandy Flicker, Electric Co-ops, and I'm also going to call up Jeff Bissonnet, Citizens Utility Board. You can join her at the desk. And Jeff, how do you say your last name?
Bissonnet.
It is Bissonnet. All right. Thank you.
Go ahead. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Sandy Flicker, and I am the Executive Director of the Oregon Rural Electric Cooperative Association. You've heard a lot of the issues of concern to rural folks this morning, and Representative Greg Smith very accurately reflected what our concerns are. So you're going to hear from me a little bit of a reiteration of what you heard, but I have some pretty brief testimony, so I just felt like it was necessary to get it on the record. There are 18 electric cooperatives in Oregon that are private utilities. They're not-for-profit utilities, and they're consumer-owned, and they serve the small and rural communities in Oregon. And if I could just quickly call your attention to the map that is attached to my testimony, you'll see very quickly that we serve a lot of the geographic service territory in Oregon, but only about 10% of the population. So just quickly in response, Chair Close, to you had a question about operational rates. Our density is only about 7 customers or less per mile of line. Some of our utilities serve 1 or 2 customers per mile of line. So obviously we just have huge density issues that cause high cost in terms of operating utilities. So I just wanted to respond to that quickly. The co-ops clearly, as consumer-owned utilities, do believe that municipalization, PUD formulation, or co-op forms of utility ownership are options that should be available to utility customers. Local control of not-for-profit utilities, we believe, can be a benefit to electricity customers. There are currently 37 consumer-owned utilities in Oregon. We collectively serve about 25% of the electric utility customers. As consumer-owned utilities, we are preference customers of the Bonneville Power Administration. So we do get the benefit of that power from Bonneville, but investor-owned utilities also receive benefits from BPA through both power purchases and through the residential exchange, which provides money for residential and small farm customers. OACA has no position on House Bill 2356. But there are many uncertainties surrounding a change in ownership of PGE. There's the uncertainty of what will emerge from either a sale or possibly a condemnation process. Many proposals have emerged in the last year or so about the ownership of PGE, and certainly a lot of proposals regarding public ownership. So now that I've expressed to you our support for those forms of utility ownership, I must also express to you our concerns about public ownership, and those really simply only have to do with the possibility of cost shifts. Being very small, very rural utilities, we believe that there should be benefits. You know, if there are benefits in terms of public ownership, then those benefits should not be basically on the backs of rural folks, that they should be benefit to everyone in Oregon. You've heard a lot about preference power, and obviously that is our major concern. My utilities are 100% customers of Bonneville. That's where they get all of their power. And Bonneville has been oversubscribed in the last couple of years. Less than 2 years ago, we had a 46% wholesale rate increase, and we're now looking at a 29% possibly wholesale rate increase in the next 6 months. That's a significant amount of increase, and it's hitting the rural utilities and the rural areas very, very hard. And it isn't about operational costs. It really is about the cost of wholesale power, which is why we're having to raise rates. And so when we hear about the possibility of that power possibly being used by, you know, the largest utility in the state, that is of concern to us. And we simply need to know a lot more about, you know, what their intentions are. We've heard that is not, they're not basing their power rates projections on power rates based on Bonneville Power. But you know, we've got a long time in the future to be concerned with. So it isn't just immediate that we are concerned with. Another issue that I wanted to bring to your attention that hasn't really been talked about this morning is we really do not want all of the mandates that were in the Oregon deregulation plan or any of the other requirements on investor-owned utilities to be imposed on consumer-owned utilities. $115 million was spent by investor-owned utilities to prepare for deregulation in Oregon. And quite frankly, you know, our very small utilities, they can't bear costs like that. We did not move towards direct access, so we have not incurred any of those costs, thank the Lord, because obviously we're having to incur the costs of the wholesale power rate increases. So, you know, we have some anxiety and some concerns about what may happen in the future with those mandates, again, when you're talking about the largest utility in the state.
And Sandra, you were exempted from 1159, correct?
Yes, in general. There are a couple of aspects of it that we comply with, but in general we are exempt from that. So that's, again, a major area of anxiety for us. And just here representing rural folks, again, let me reiterate that there's some property tax issues that they've expressed some anxiety about as well. So that is another issue that sort of comes to the forefront for rural folks. But again, let me reiterate that we have no position on 2356. We certainly support public entities, but we do have questions and concerns about the possible impact of a major change in this utility ownership, and we really hope to have the opportunity to get more information and really assurances that there will be no cost shifts, whatever happens with the ownership of Portland General Electric. Thank you.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, I would ask one
question. Madam Gallegos.
You do mention that Morrill County derives about half of their current property tax revenue from the PGE facilities. Do you know what the dollar amount is?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith. I just didn't know whether you knew.
Okay.
That's fine. Thanks.
Thanks.
Go ahead. Jeff?
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bissonnette, and I'm representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. CUB is an independent nonprofit organization established by Oregon voters in 1984 to represent the interests of residential utility ratepayers. We currently have about 6,000 members across the state that currently provide about 80% of CUB's budget through regular sort of small donations. And today I come before you to offer testimony in opposition to House Bill 2356. As we've been hearing all morning, you know, PGE, Portland General Electric, the state's largest electric utility, is in a state of limbo, and therefore its customers are in limbo. As Commissioner Sten noted, PGE is for sale, and PGE will have a new owner, and that's all we know for sure right now. Everything else is up in the air. And as consumers, we're really looking for positive options to try and extract ourselves from the Enron bankruptcy process. And as customers, we feel that we need a full range of options available to us. We view HB 2356 as removing an option that may in fact turn out to be the best option and offers the best advantages for consumers. So in short, this is not really the time to foreclose options for the customers of PGE. You've heard a lot of the potential outcomes, and it's really a pretty short list. And before you in our written testimony, you kind of have a summary of what those range of options are. And again, you've heard many of them already this morning. But briefly, a private purchaser could just buy it and keep it to sell in a few years. And that's kind of the cycle that we've been in already for the last several years, and that doesn't bring any of the stability that we need as consumers. Or that Oregon's economy needs in the state's largest electric utility. We've had a lot of discussion about a private purchaser possibly buying the utility and selling off the assets piece by piece, and this is probably one of the scariest options that we face. We could see continued ownership by Enron or a restructured Enron. It's been referred to a couple of times as the OPCO option. That seems to sort of ebb and flow as a potential outcome as the process goes along. We keep thinking that it's gone, and then it seems to sort of rise again on the radar screen. But basically, all this would mean is that PGE would continue to be owned by the Enron creditors and managed by the remnants of Enron management for the sole purpose of generating revenue to pay off Enron's debts. And again, as with the other options, the creditors would have no incentive to lower rates and could have a greater incentive to cut costs in order to maximize revenues. And again, this is not in the customer's interest.
Jeff, let me interrupt you there if
yes,
I could.
Ma'am.
That would retain that entity under the Public Utility Commission, would it not?
It would, and I can talk about that in just a moment.
Okay.
And then finally, we could see a highly leveraged private purchaser, a purchase completely supported by debt. Although a public purchase would also be doing would also be funded by debt and be highly leveraged, the differences in the interest rates between the corporate financial markets and the financing available to public purchasers is marked. And right now, a corporate buyer would probably have greater costs to consumers, could lead to higher, significantly higher rates, and that is something that customers and Oregon's economy just can't absorb right now. The interests of PGE customers are to keep a unified utility with retained generation assets, i.e. the existing power plants and hydro dams that PGE owns now, and most importantly, to get out from under the cloud of the Enron bankruptcy. Currently, PGE does not have a long-term owner. That means there's no long-term plan for the company, no long-range view to guide resource investment, little planning for long-term resources. You've heard a lot about condemnation and how that may or may not be affecting private bids for PGE. rather than focusing on condemnation, I think there's a very big issue in that PGE is under a number of federal investigations related to the its connection to Enron and the manipulations in the energy markets. PGE is also mixed up in far-reaching requests by the state of California for return of money because of the manipulations that contributed or were partially contributed to the meltdown of that state's energy market. And because of all that, PGE is as exposed today to another potential energy crisis as it was 2 years ago, and without a long-term owner, customers can't expect to be better protected. The city of Portland may be a good alternative for consumers. It's the only purchaser that has stated anything close to having interests that are in line and in common with the customers. It's the only known purchaser who has the financial ability and a vision to invest in the utility. And it's the only purchaser that may be able to bring stability to the troubled waters surrounding this utility. Indeed, if you believe the news reports even as recently as today, it may in fact be the only purchaser for PGE, the only alternative to continued ownership by Enron. We've had a lot of discussion today that there is a lot of work even with a potential public purchase of PGE, and we acknowledge that there's a lot of work to be done. Customers need to have a voice in the development of a new utility. The governance and operation of the new utility has to be regional in nature, representing the entire service territory covering 6 counties and approximately 50 municipal jurisdictions. There needs to be a good governance structure developed, and the new utilities board needs to be accountable to ratepayers. The board has to represent the diversity of the Oregonians who live throughout the service territory, but most importantly, those board members will be Oregonians, and the boardrooms and the decisions being made in boardrooms will not be in Texas, in New York, or in Europe. There have been discussions about oversight of the PUC and PUC protections. As a consumer group that works a lot in the PUC process, and that is the main reason why Oregon voters created CUB in 1984, was to protect the interests of utility ratepayers in the PUC process. We have some real concerns about the PUC process, and we'll have ample opportunity to talk about them in this committee when House Bill 3575 comes before you with raising concerns that consumers, residential, commercial, and industrial have with the PUC process. In regard to rates, when Chairman Hemingway became chair of the PUC, Oregon had the 6th lowest rates in the country. Today, Oregon has the 31st lowest rates in the country. That's headed in the wrong direction. Sandy Flicker to my right raised concerns about Senate Bill 1149 and requirements that principles from Senate Bill 1149 sort of be part of the new utility. We understand those concerns as customers who helped write and support 1149 and continue to do so today. We don't really see that this changes the dynamics. Any publicly owned utility, can offer its customers direct access, and if they so choose to do that, then that utility would come under the auspices of Senate Bill 1149. It's a local decision. That was the principle that guided that, and that's the principle that still guides that. In the potential public purchase of PGE, the customers, the residential customers, commercial customers, and industrial customers would ask that utility to submit itself to 1149 to offer direct access, to continue the portfolio of energy options currently available to PGE customers, to continue public purposes, to continue low-income bill payment assistance. That is what the customers would ask of this new publicly owned utility. And so, again, we don't view that the dynamic around 1149 would change.
Okay. Thank you. We do have, in the interest of time, we need to move on. So, questions quickly? Representative Merkley.
Thank you. Mr. Bissonnette, thanks for your testimony. Earlier I asked Oregonians for Jobs and Power to provide a list of all of their funders, and Mr. Riggs happily agreed to do so.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned most of your funding comes from memberships. I'm assuming like $50 a year or that sort of thing.
Actually, our average donation is $27 a year.
Okay. Could you provide us with a list of funders, say, that are something over $100 of everyone, to help us understand who's where CUP gets its funding and the same principle that I was...
I will ask our board to provide that, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anything we'd provide that to Megan? I'm sure the members would be interested.
I have one more question if we have time.
Follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On your list of options, you did not list the possibility of a buyout by the current managers of PGE. Is that an option that exists or is being actively pursued?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your testimony.
Thanks.
Penny, I'm intending to go for another 15 minutes. I'd like to call Tom O'Connor and David Barenberg. Tom is with Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities, and David is with League of Oregon Cities. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to be here. My name is Tom O'Connor. I'm Director of Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities. We are an association that represents the existing 12, anyway, of the existing municipal systems in Oregon. Municipal utilities in Oregon have been here since 1889 with the formation of McMinnville Water and Light. Our newest municipal utility was the City of Hermiston, which was formed in just about a year ago in 2001. We are public entities. We are governed by our local elected officials, our local boards. We provide nonprofit service. Our officials are subject to referendum recall. We are governed by the Public Records Act, Open Meetings Law, Local Budget Law, and the municipal audit process. Nationally, you may be interested, there are about 2,000 publicly owned electric utilities. That I'm not including consumer-owned utilities of the rural co-ops. There are a good deal more of those. They range in size from something like the Long Island Power Authority, which was recently formed in the New York area, which has over 1 million customers. Some of the larger cities include San Antonio, Sacramento, Salt River Project, which is a very large district in Arizona. Most of the public power systems around the country are small communities, and no exception to that here in Oregon. We are as small as Cascade Locks and Drain, which have only about 500 electric meters to serve. Oregon Municipal Electric Utilities opposes the preemption of local community authority contained in House Bill 2356. We do not have a particular position on which of the many options that are out there to the community that the community ought to choose. There's a long way to go on that, and we'll want to look at that along with everybody else. But we do oppose the preemption of local government authority. The reasons are that we believe that electricity is an essential public service. It's not a commodity, as Enron and Reliant and other marketers have tried to say. We believe that this essential service is best provided, in our minds at least, by locally controlled nonprofit entities. That's not to say that there aren't some very well-run private utilities operating around the country, and the people have that choice, and that's the key. We believe that the people have, and their elected officials, have the fundamental right to decide who will serve them and how they are served. We have, as you know, there's two types of regulation of electric utilities. On the private side, those folks are regulated by the Public Utility Commission because they're profit entities. Consumer-owned utilities are regulated by our local officials. Either of those two options can work well. But the most important thing we feel is that if it doesn't work out, if the PUC regulation of the regulated monopoly is not sufficient to protect the public, or if the public is so fundamentally dissatisfied with the service that they're getting, that the local community retains the authority to change that service. It doesn't happen. I wouldn't pretend that it happens very often. Those discussions take place a lot, often when franchise agreements are up. But in circumstances where the public is dissatisfied with the service they're getting, they need to have that authority. And that that's happened in Hermiston, where the utility that was serving them at the time said, we're going to close our local office and we're going to serve you with an 800 number. The people of Hermiston said, no, thank you, we'll do it ourselves. In the case, I think we would say that there's another extraordinary situation here, as has been described in the Portland and surrounding county areas with Enron and the sale of PGE. So I hope that there's a lot of issues to look at here, and we certainly want to be a part of looking at those, but we urge you not to throw away the option that local communities have. Thank you.
Could I ask you, the whole idea of the preferential power from BPA, how does that affect you and your company?
We are, my folks, who are often called the mini munis, are very much impacted by Bonneville. We are, for the most part, 100% requirements customers of Bonneville, except for EWEB. So the disposition of Bonneville Power is very important to us.
Another big one joining you, I'm trying to think how that would play out for the smaller places like Drain with 500 meters.
And that's why we want to be involved in the process. There are regional issues there. There are federal issues there, and some state issues perhaps. We don't know the impact. Under the current contracts with Bonneville, if the entity were to form, they would not be eligible for preference power. Bonneville would purchase for them if they chose to go to Bonneville. Bonneville would purchase for them power on the market at market prices, not preference power prices. Post 2006, in the new contracts, again, depending on how this entity was structured, they may or may not be eligible for preference power. Bonneville has a series of criteria and eligibility requirements, conditions to serve, that they would have to meet in order, if they wanted to access preference power. So there's a whole range of federal issues. The short answer is yes, it could impact us. How it will, we don't know. There's also opportunities for partnership, so that's certainly an issue that we want to be involved in, is important to us.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm David Barenberg from the League of Oregon Cities, and I used to think the least safe place in Oregon was between Tonya Harding and a TV camera, but I think it may be between a committee lunch, the weekend, and other engagements, so I will try to be brief. Essentially, in anticipating Representative Merkley's question, is the League is funded by contributions from 238 of Oregon's 240 cities, and the two cities that are not members are ghost towns with no residents. So that's our background and funding source. And I'm here to offer our voice also in opposition to House Bill 2356. And essentially, we would oppose the bill whether it said substituting for the number 400,000, saying cities under 1,000 or any other number, just for the sense that we think it is a vital tool for cities to be able to have the condemnation authority within the authorities that they have. Something that's been very critical in a whole range of activities of government on many levels, from putting in roads, sewer systems, parks, other things, can be a vital tool in providing necessary services to citizens. So we believe that it is something that is very important. We think that Representative Smith raises a large number of issues and concerns. We think that there are processes and opportunities to have those put on the table and discussed and resolved. I know there's a lot of frustration with the secrecy agreement, and as a parent of a 12-year-old, I can empathize. It seems like he must have signed a secrecy agreement, because every day when I ask him what happened at school, it was, you know, not much. And, you know, I feel the frustration of, okay, there's something there. So, you know, I think it puts puts government in a position that it's not used to being in, where it's used to being transparent and everything on the table. It just really raises the fear of the unknown and complicates things greatly. The League has tried to take a role in this process of just helping to facilitate communication between the city of Portland and the other cities that are impacted, and you know, as the city has reached out of Portland to engage its other government partners, and we're helping to support that effort any way we can. And with that, I would just like to end my testimony and be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I would like to say I also have a 12-year-old son, and I think there may be a League of 12-year-olds rely on secrecy a lot. Representative Gallegos.
Well, I think it's pretty clear that this isn't just an issue that's really affects the Portland metro area. Clearly, there are cities in southern Oregon, eastern Oregon, that have significant impact should this, regardless of what transpires. Is there any, is this just a good faith effort? I mean, is there anything you have authority to intervene in on behalf of the other cities should negotiations or whatever transpire not necessarily be in your favor? What would you guys be able to do?
Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos, I understand the question would be if something going on in the metro area and the discussion is going to impact negatively other communities, where would we be? And the answer is helping to facilitate communications between the different members to try to work out the issues and problems. My earlier comment of the least safe place is between the committee and its adjournment might be superseded by the worst place for an association to be is in a position where it cannibalizes its members. Which of your kids do you love most? Our role is really to facilitate communications and engagement between the affected parties to try to resolve the issues rather than to take sides, is to help just facilitate.
And just a quick response, Madam Chair, Representative Gallegos. Public Power has been accused of a lot of things over the years, but I don't think one of them has ever been that we would go quietly if our interests were at stake in some way, and we're going to be very much involved in this process at the local, the regional, and the federal level.
Other questions? Seeing none, gentlemen, thank you very much for your testimony. And that concludes our witnesses on this bill. We intended to have an open public hearing, and I think we've done that. I appreciate everybody that's offered their opinions, and I think both sides have been presented well. So we will take this all into consideration. And if there's, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2564. Is there anything else for the good of the committee? Seeing none, we are adjourned.